I'm going to read the Thursday morning. This is these cycles of weekly prayers, twice a day, both for the morning and the evening. And they're so rich. They're so rich. So it's like an Evrod, like it's like a weird. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. O my Allah, you are self-standing by your own essence, encompassing with your qualities, revealed through your names, manifest in your acts, and hidden by virtue of what is only known to you. You are alone in your majesty, as you are the one, the unique. And you have singularized yourself, as you permanently endure in eternity without beginning or end. You are Allah, who by virtue of oneness is the only one referred to in Iyaka, like in the Fatiha, Iyaka Nabudu, Iyaka Nasta'in. With you, there is none other than you. In you, there is none but you. I ask of you, O Allah, for annihilation in your subsistence, and for subsistence through you, not with you. There is no God but you. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and ask for some illumination and guidance through this prayer. It's such a beautiful prayer. It's a powerful prayer of knowledge and unity. O my Allah, you are self-standing. I think that's the Qayyum. By your own essence. So that, you know, this goes back. Allah does not depend on any other being or anything more primordial. This is also in the Ikhlas stated. And you are encompassing with your qualities so that your divine names, your attributes reach everywhere and everything. And revealed through your name. So that might be another word for quality. We don't have the Arabic here. I don't know. Revealed through your names. Manifest in your acts, and hidden by virtue of what is only known to you. So I think that's fairly clear, that passage. You are alone in your majesty, as you are the one, the unique. And you have singularized yourself, as you permanently endure in eternity without beginning or end. You are Allah, who by virtue of oneness is the only one referred to in Iyaka. With you there is none other than you, in you there is none but you. Now this is a very beautiful and clear statement of total oneness. I ask of you, O Allah, for annihilation in your subsistence, and for subsistence through you, not with you. So this is the first. So he begins with a praise and a declaration of the unity and onlyness and singularity of Allah. And then he comes to this request. I ask of you, O Allah, for annihilation in your subsistence, so that basically that we should not subsist through our ownness, our selfness, but only through the subsistence of Allah. And for subsistence through you, not with you. So they're not to have two. Because annihilation in the subsistence of Allah is existence, is true existence. And for subsistence through you, not with you. So again, that there be only one. And then he affirms, La ilaha illa anta, there is no God but you. O my Allah, cause me to be absent in your presence. And in quote, in parentheses as here, from myself, in your presence. And, you know, there's sayings that, you know, when we are present, Allah is absent. When Allah is present, we are absent. So this refers to that, that we cannot be present when Allah is present. Allah is fully present. So, O Allah, cause me to be absent in your presence, annihilated in your being, and extinguished in your contemplation. So, again, these such subtle variations, and but it would, we'd have to have the Arabic to have a little more understanding of some of the subtleties. But extinguished in your contemplation is beautiful, with that, to feel ourself contemplated by Allah. You know, we say muraqaba is a word used for contemplation, for focusing on and in a, with all of our being on, can be on the guide and on various levels of beings and on Allah. And then at the higher level, it is, you know, Allah's own muraqabah. We are simply Allah's own contemplation. Sever me from all that severs me from you. That's clear. Occupy me with you alone by turning me away from all that distracts me from you. La ilaha illa anta. O my Allah, you are the truly existent, while I am the fundamentally non-existent. Your subsistence is by virtue of your essence. Mine is only accidental. So my Allah, lavish your true existence upon my fundamental non-existence, that I may be as I was when I was not at all, and you may be as you are, as you always have been. So this to me is a little mysterious, because it says, lavish your true existence upon my fundamental non-existence. Well, so that, in my own understanding, was what brought us to be, from the non-existence to existence, to borrowed existence, let's say. But then Ibn Arabi says here, that I may be as I was when I was not at all. So he wants to stay really in that state of non-existence. And you may be as you are, as you always have been. So, I mean, I guess that is the total annihilation. But annihilation in God, which is true life. There is no God but you. You are the one who accomplishes whatever you desire, while I am a servant for you, one among some of the servants. O my Allah, you have desired me, and you have desired through me. Thus I am the desired, and you the desirer. So this is, again, you know, a reversal of the usual way of thinking of the seeker, that the dervish, the human being, is the one who desires God. But this is going back, again, to the point of origin, that it is only really Allah who is desiring us. May you be what is desired through me, so that you yourself become the desired and I the desirer. So it's interesting, what we think of as the normal, actually Ibn Arabi says, only comes after we realize that state of being the desired and Allah the desirer. Only then can we truly be the desirer, but knowing who is the one desiring. So we are like the transparent, you know, veil or gate gauze through which Allah desires his own being. There is no God but you. But that veil entails all of our humanity, all of our divine qualities. So it's not a little thing, it's a big thing. O my Allah, you are unmanifest in all that is unseen. So that seems fairly... And anytime you want to stop or talk about, please. Manifest in every concrete reality. Heard in every account, be it true or false. Yeah, this is, and interesting, huh? And Ibn Arabi once said too, all versions of Quran are true. So whatever anyone thinks of is the Quran as an interpretation is on some level true. And this is, in a sense, coming to that, that all that is said is Allah, is the only one really heard in every account, is only one heard, then it would be the only one speaking. Known in the degree of unity and duality. You are the one named by the names which have been brought down in revelation, so that you are veiled from being seen by the eye and concealed from being grasped by the intelligence. You are the one named by the names which have been brought down in revelation, so that you are veiled from being seen by the eye and concealed from being grasped by the intelligence. I mean, we know that our intelligence cannot grasp the divine being. It says, you know, no mind can grasp him. And veiled from being seen by the eye, that's interesting. I'm surprised to see that here, although, because again, Musa Effendi said, you know, that these eyes, these earthly eyes, can see God. That's one of the discussions in Sufi, in the field of Sufism and Sufi masters. Some say you cannot see God with these eyes, or some say that you can't, and then some say that only God can see God. So that's the absence from self.
So if our earthly eyes, is that when you're at a certain station that you have the possibility, or is that when you die you will see?
No, it would be when the veil of ignorance departs. That's what it says. So we think we're not seeing God. The eyes are always seeing God. We're always seeing Allah. We just don't know it.
We're not aware.
That's so amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, already that brings you a lot closer. You know, than saying, no, you can't see God only in, you know, like exactly special states. Or no, we're always seeing God in all of our states. You know, there's a saying that reported by the Prophet that says that, you know, the glories of my face are veiled by 70,000 veils of light and darkness. And if I removed them, everything would be obliterated, extinguished. But there are other levels, maybe, than where we see through the veils, or is it also that part of maturing on the path is to be able to bear that?
To have less,
you know,
veils.
The more, yeah, to be able to see the light more and more intensely without being overcome by it. I think that's also true. O my Allah, you have revealed yourself in the particular revelations of your qualities, so that all the degrees of created existence have become diversified. So the degrees of created existence are the qualities. In each degree, you are named by the realities of all that is named, appointing the intelligences as witnesses to the intricacies of the interior realities of all that is manifest as signs and of all that is knowable. So, I mean, that's a little, I mean, it's not, it's not so abstruse, but who are the intelligences? Are those our own intelligences, or are those intellects, meaning, you know, individual intellects, let's say, of the saints, or the friends, or the prophets? Are those the intelligences, or are they disembodied intelligence, or the angelic intelligences? That's I'm not clear about. You have released the primordial spirits upon the plains of divine knowledge, where they become bewildered and wander about amidst the illusions of their Syriac subtleties. Well, maybe we'll look at a note here, Syriac subtleties. Okay, lines 50 to 51, that's an interesting note. But so he does speak of the word Syriac. In terms of its Arabic root, the word Syriac, Suryani, alludes to the ideas of permeation and diffusion and the night journey, as well as to secret or mystery, Sir. It equally derives from the Sanskrit Surya, which means sun. It refers to a primordial solar language, considered by Islamic tradition to have been the one spoken by Adam in paradise. Interesting. In the Futuhat, Ibn Arabi links the Syriac station, al-Makam al-Suryani, to the original Adamic nature of man, of human being. Interesting. Well, so primordial spirits might also refer to the prophets and the great saints, you know, when they say, I was before Adam, and, right, because the prophet himself, I think, was said of these primordial spirit wandering in bliss or in utter bewilderment with God. When you have withdrawn them from all whole and part, removed them from all where and when, and stripped them of all how much and what, when you have made known to them the essential knowledge in the places of their non-recognition, liberated them by announcing yourself as the Lord in the divine places of annunciation, and caused all sense of separation to fall from them by raising the veil of the Ghaim, then they are arranged according to the primordial harmony of Bismillah Rahman Rahim. How beautiful. I mean, inshallah, we are all these subtle spirit, primordial spirits, that we were all in that station. And as we know, it was in the pre-eternal station that Allah asked us. That is reported in Quran, am I not your Lord? So this is referred to here, liberated them by announcing yourself as the Lord in the divine places of annunciation. So maybe that was just one place of annunciation. And caused all sense of separation to fall from them by raising the veil of the Ghaim. So the Ghaim is from the Ghaib, which means hidden. Ghaim is a letter. There's the Ayn and the Ghaim. And it's written the same way, just one has the dot under, which or over or above. Meshtikain, and the other is just the Ayn, which also means eye, so therefore seen and visible. So raising the veil from the Ghaim, sometimes it's referred to as taking the dot away from the Ghaim to make it visible. Then they are arranged, how beautiful, according to the primordial harmony of Bismillah Rahman Rahim. How wonderful. So as though it's interesting. I mean, you know, this is just pure speculation here, but it seems to, you know, you have released the primordial spirits upon the plains of divine knowledge, where they become bewildered and wander about amidst the illusions of their Syriac subtleties. So, you know, when you have withdrawn them from all whole and part, removed them from all where and when, and strip them. So of any, in a sense, created aspect or anything that would localize them or define them as this or that. So presumably totally...
outside time and space.
Outside time and space, yeah, exactly. When you have made known to them the essential knowledge in the places of their non-recognition. So non-recognition, I guess, would be like ignorance, honestly. I think that's a word maybe for ignorance. And then as though Allah is revealing to these primordial spirits, both releasing them from constraint of any kind and then revealing them to them, essential knowledge in the places of their ignorance, liberating them by announcing yourself as Lord in the divine places of annunciation, and causing all sense of separation to fall from them by raising the veil of the Qayyim. So that the utter, pure, all-encompassing witnessing, presumably where they would then see themselves as no other than the one who's revealing himself. Then they are arranged. So somehow then comes a further, it's interesting, a further level of the divine creation as the love. Because that what is said when Allah says, am I not your Lord? It said all the spirits fell totally in love. You know, and so then they are arranged according to the primordial harmony of Bismillah. How beautiful. So they go from a bewilderment, a state of wandering, to a state of utter harmony and bliss and love and creative order. Oh my Allah, how often do I cry out to you as one who calls when you are the one who calls for the caller? How often do I secretly whisper to you as one who confides intimacies when you are the one who confides for the confider? Oh my Allah, if union is the essence of separateness, and closeness, the very soul of distance. So, in other words, he's speaking of a station, of a reality, you know, that is beyond, of course, separation and distance and change and all those things that we know as part of our life. If knowledge is the site of ignorance, in other words, there is always the knowledge is always there, closeness is always there, union is always there. But in the divine play of the attributes, it just appears as though, and we experience all these different states of separation and ignorance. What then is the destination, and where is the starting of the path? He's saying, so if this is always true, if you're always here, then where's the path? You know, that's what we sing. There's no path and no goal, because we're always there. O my Allah, you are what is sought behind the aim of every seeker, what is acknowledged in the eye of the denier. So he's continuing in that vein. So really, there is no denying. And what is truly close in the separation of the one who distances. Yet here conjecture has supplanted understanding. Who is distanced from whom? Who is favored by whom? Beauty says, you alone, while baseness cries, the one who rendered good and beautiful all that he has created. I like that. So he's saying that beauty is that affirmation of the you alone. That's what beauty says, you alone, Allah. While baseness, he calls it baseness. It sounds kind of beautiful to me, you know, the one who rendered good and beautiful. But it's base in terms of knowledge. It's on a much lower level of knowledge because it's assuming two. It's assuming the servant and the Lord. And the Lord is the one who renders good and beautiful all that he creates. And the servant is the one who recognizes and praises for it, but it's still base compared to you alone. The former, so the you alone, is an end at which the journey comes to a halt. And the latter is a veil by virtue of imagining there is other than you. There is other. Yeah. O my Allah, when will intellect, this is, be free from the bonds of constraint? So, in other words, constrained by the feeling of separation and two-ness and all of these things that burden us. And when shall thought's eye be able to glimpse the fair beauties of essential realities? When will understanding be severed from the root of untruth? And when shall imagination be unfettered from the cords and snares which tie it to associating? So, when will conceptualizing be safe from the schism of separating? And when shall the precious soul be detached from the characteristics of its creatorial nature? So that's a beautiful, I mean, wow, that's a beautiful...
Could you read the last sentence again about nature?
And when shall the precious soul be detached from the characteristics of its creatorial nature?
Creatorial.
Creature nature. O my Allah, acts of obedience do not profit you, nor do acts of disobedience harm you. In the hand of your almighty sovereignty lies the command of hearts and forelocks. You know, it says that, Quran, that Allah has a grasp of our forelock. It's a very beautiful image in a way, that because the forelock is what, in a way, by where we're pulled. And that our forelock, all of our forelocks, whether we have hair or not, is in Allah's hand. And to you is returned the whole affair, without distinguishing between obedient or disobedient. So whether we're obedient or disobedient, we're all going back. Or, you know, or from that higher level, we never left. O my Allah, for no matter distracts you from any other. Yeah, we were talking, they said, you know, that on his night journey, when Allah asked him, O my beloved Muhammad, or my beloved servant, what did you bring me as a gift? Of course, because whenever you go to someone's house or domicile, you bring them a gift. And he said, I brought you the transgressions and the heedlessness and the wrongdoings of my community and the lack of faith of my community as gifts. I mean, sometimes if someone could fall into a state of haq, you know, or wedged, what's called wedged of ecstasy, that they don't distinguish anymore. That can happen, you know. So everything seems the same to them because they see God in everything. But as far as I understand, that's not like an ultimate state. So that you keep going through. It's like you go through ocean after ocean after ocean. And so you know, when you come out of that into sobriety again, you distinguish again, but you have that ocean of the haq within you, but you can come back to distinguishing. So that's why it's called, you know, sobriety, ecstasy and sobriety. Mm-hmm. So you have both, we would call making distinctions, furqan, it's called an act of more sobriety, you know.
But it's important.
All can be guidedness, totally guided, you know, sometimes, like we might not know ourselves. Sometimes, you know, ultimately we don't really know. Sometimes we follow because we've been told, and so that's one way. And then the deeper way is when we're guided. Something might not look right, but we know it's okay, it's good. And the other way might look good, but it's not. So that's where you have to be guided. And that's not a question of logic anymore. You can't use your mind in a way for that. So you both are acting, you know, both are part of you. And you just go through different zones of, you know, it's a way of balance. That's what's called the middle way. I mean, that's one reason why this path is called the middle way. The sincerity is also when you act according to the disposition of your state. So that you act, you know, truly from from your heart, and that will be different, very different in different moments.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. You can begin, if you begin observing, you know, and that's what we should be doing also, is observing our heart, always having our focus on the heart place, you know. And then sometimes our heart can be closed, feel closed, you know. And that's, for the lover, that's very scary. So then we turn and ask Allah, you know, and for forgiveness, really. Because it comes from something. But sometimes it just will come over us just to bring us back, because we're in a kind of midway state. I've noticed, it's interesting, that sometimes what we would think of as a negative state will come to us. And that will be like the thorn that will pique us to come back to presence and remembrance, you know. And that's all it was. That's what's its purpose. It wasn't like, you know, oh, I'm getting so negative now. It was more just like the cold wind, icy wind to wake us up, because we were, you know. Maybe Allah wanted us at that moment, you know. Imagine the Sultan of Love desiring us, and when we're, the lovers are falling asleep or, you know, unaware. So then, okay, so sends a little thorn.
Like maybe somebody would see that as like a punishment or something, but it's like...
Exactly.
It's like,
yes, that's true, Amina. Yeah, that's true. Right. This is why Noor was very careful. He never used the word punishment. You know, he used the divine correction, but it's all mercy. It's all Allah's mercy to call us, whether, you know, through the slap or the kiss. Yeah, the hot or the cold. Yeah, the sweet or the sour, the bitter. It's all ways of being called, exactly. They're all notes of love. You know, if we can, and that's why it's so important to keep in touch with our dervishness and our dervish community, because that is going to support that reality for us. You know, otherwise it can start to seem like a fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when you're too much out in the world, unless, you know, you're someone like Effendi or something, but for us, we need to keep connecting back and to... It's amazing the way the real then can seem like a fantasy when you're in the dunya, when you're in the unreal. Yeah, because the real is so amazing. The real is so overwhelmingly beautiful and merciful that sometimes it doesn't get believed. That's why often the rejectors, you know, they couldn't accept the love of God. They just, you know, they said, this isn't real, this is untrue. Yeah. Mustafa, prayer that nothing distracts you from God does not mean that, I mean, maybe at moments we might turn away completely, you know, in a kind of state of annihilation, but it just means that you don't see two. I think that's more what I see, and more the teaching coming from Musafir Effendi. And so you're in the world, you appreciate, you, but you see Allah, you don't, it does not itself become, you don't get, it's very interesting, it's a very interesting subject for the lovers, because, you know, it's called, well, that is a form of intoxication, let's say that is a lesser, so if you get intoxicated with something, but it become, you forget Allah with it, that's called intoxication. Another definition of intoxication. And not necessarily, that's a different kind of intoxication. but if you taste something or you love something and you see Allah in it or through it or before it, whichever, you know, those, then I think there's, that is still the state of unity. I think that's what he means, distraction. Really something. Yeah,
Madhina. I was going to say that part, that it may be that we are to see everything as Allah.
Yes.
Like the distraction of loving a child to God.
Exactly.
Allah.
How could we not
in
love
words,
our children? That wouldn't be right.
We're not supposed to see anything else but Allah and everything,
right.
Because
exactly.
That is His creation. And that is meant to be.
Right, exactly. Because otherwise it would mean you don't love being,
yeah.
You don't love each other. You don't, and it says those who love each other for my sake will be on thrones that even the prophets and martyrs will, you know, be in awe of.
Because the moment we focused on something as something.
Right. Exactly.
Like,
as something.
Allah
so,
is there,
exactly.
Like, but if
that's right.
Allah,
that it subsists in itself. It's exactly what the beginning of the prayer. I think that's a good point. Was talking about, you know, about himself. He was asking. And so if we see something as independent.
It's a duality.
Right.
Yeah, that's
duality.
Yeah, that's true. Alhamdulillah. I mean, we don't have to read the whole. I mean, I think we have the basic. Because I feel that we've, inshallah, grappled with some of the basic principles of this prayer. Yeah.
Thank you, Shaykh.
Alhamdulillah, this was great.